This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
You're listening to This Day in History, a podcast dedicated to examining history from a standpoint of determining which event on any given day had the greatest impact on our lives. Now your host, Tony Hubert and Armand Kachigian.
It's March 9th. It's This Day in History on lineupmedia.fm. Tony Hubert with you. My partner, Armand Kachigian, raconteur, provocateur, saboteur.
Agent provocateur. Don't try to make friends with me. You've been absent for the last 2 days.
I have meetings to attend to. Business at hand. The business of doing business. Okay. That's my business.
Yes.
And it's none of yours,
The business
sir.
Of America is business.
Is business.
Calvin Coolidge. Great man.
So all the events for March 9th, all the birthdays for March 9th, all the funerals, well, those who exited stage left on March 9th, all coming at you today here on lineupmedia.fm, brought to you by Amazon.com and by Audible.com. When Armand and I have book recommendations, film recommendations, or any type of recommendation, we're going to tell you how to get it and where to get it through our website, This Day in History Podcast. .com. All right, Armand, you ready?
Yep.
I'm going to go to 1796. You may interject, as you will do anyway, if I have missed anything in the events or birthdays that did not make it down to our little prep sheet for this here podcast. But on the March 9th, 1796, Napoleon Bonaparte, one of your favorites, he marries his first wife, Josephine. Oh, boy, did he love his Josephine.
Yeah.
My Lord, that's truly a love affair. No, I'm not being facetious.
Was several years older than he was. She's a widow. Her Beauharnais, her first husband, was guillotined, which was common back then. I don't know what he did, but it was obviously.
But Napoleon had nothing to do with that.
No, it was before she met him. And anyway, they got along well. Everything was going good, but, you know. It wasn't real popular, marrying a widow with two children who's older than you. That simply wasn't
done. But why not?
Done.
George Washington did the same thing.
Yeah, but the French are different.
Why? They're not. I thought the French were open to this.
No.
Too Catholic?
French are tolerant to banging your wife's two kids, but not marrying someone with two kids.
So Josephine de Beauharnais.
Yeah, but the big problem was she couldn't give him any more kids.
Yeah.
And once he was emperor and she
he
was
needed
empress,
to reproduce.
Right. He needed an heir,
so
and
he's
she could not provide one.
He's somewhere between George Washington and Henry VIII.
Closer to Henry VIII. Mm-hmm. So he dumps her, and he marries Marie Louise of Austria.
Can you recite his letter? What's the famous letter to Josephine?
An army marches on its stomach.
I don't think that was to her, was it?
No, that was a famous quote.
Yeah.
All right.
But a true love affair, though.
I think it was something like get lost. In French, of course.
No,
he really did love her. In fact, that was his last word.
When he was
Josephine.
On
St. Helena.
He was on St. Helena.
That's right.
Which is not Elba.
No. He got back. He was on Elba, I think, when she died. She died, you know.
Yeah.
And then, he was on Elba then. But anyway.
No kids.
Star-crossed lovers.
It isn't amazing, though, how many of the, like,
she was grandson was Napoleon III.
Yeah, but it's not his kid.
No, but
it's hers.
Yeah,
but, it's but when
Napoleon
you think about
III,
there is no George Washington family tree.
Just as well,
the Lincoln family tree.
He had bad teeth.
Died out.
I'm gonna pass along those genes.
You know what I mean? There is no Hitler has nephews, but there's no Hitler family tree.
If only the Kennedys would expire.
That's almost mathematically impossible.
Yeah, I don't think so. Boy, they breed. My God.
Well, they're good Irish Catholics.
Yeah, well, they're Irish Catholics.
I said they're good Irish Catholics.
That's an oxymoron.
What is? Irish and Catholic?
No, being good.
Oh, I see what you did
gotcha,
there.
Gotcha,
Armenian swine.
Any letters, address them to
Armand Kachigian at 103 West Vandalia.
Hey, don't give that out.
Why? Because you live here? Speaking of the French,
home address.
1831, the French Foreign Legion, Armand.
Yeah.
Well, King Louis-Philippe, to support his war in Algeria, because that's what kings do.
They
have wars.
Why not?
Algeria.
Just print some money and go to war.
Not an ideal place to fight a war, I might add.
Where men go to forget. Now, let's see. Abbott and Costello were in the Foreign Legion. Laurel and Hardy were in the Foreign Legion.
What's the big spot in Algeria? Is it Tangiers or is that Morocco?
Tangier is Morocco, yeah. Algiers.
What the hell is Algiers? Oh, just Algiers.
Algeria, yeah.
Well, that's no fun.
I don't think it's Tangiers, isn't it? Tangier, isn't it?
Tangier. And that's where I'm screwed up. It's Tangier and Algiers.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay, so the establishment of the French Foreign Legion,
yeah.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah, I think so. They're still around. They can't fight worth a shit, but they're still around.
Do you ever consider joining the Foreign Legion?
I have nothing to forget about.
Okay.
I despise all my ex-mistresses.
Well, they're not fighting them.
That's why you go to forget, though. That's why you join the Legion.
That's why. Get it off your mind.
Right.
Go to.
Remember Laurel and Hardy? Hardy joined to forget that woman.
Invade some Saharan country.
He pulls out the picture of her, and like everybody in the whole barracks has her picture, too.
Yes. Yes. The muse.
That's why they all went to forget.
The muse of the Foreign Legion.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. She was grateful.
We all have something in common.
For recruiting, yeah.
A brotherhood and a bond.
You better
know. More
Uncle
so
Sam.
Than you know. 1841, U.S. Supreme Court in the case, the United States versus the Amistad. Well, this is the case where the captive Africans who had seized control of that ship, Amistad, and that was carrying them, of course, over in the slave trade.
Voluntarily.
Well, as some would say,
came.
Well,
it's a pleasure
as Ben Carson would say, they immigrated.
Hey, so did Obama.
That's what he
Obama
said.
Obama said that too.
That's what he
on at least 12 occasions. All right, so don't go after Ben.
Anyway,
brilliant man.
You know he has a picture of himself in his house as Jesus.
Well, he is.
Oh,
listen,
okay.
The guy's board certified. Remember Alec Baldwin in Malice?
Yes,
he's board certified. I am God.
I am God.
He is.
So the Africans who had
I'm not board certified in podiatry.
You're
the devil.
You're a demagogue.
No, I'm not even that.
So
I'm groundling. All right.
Those who had seized control.
Wasn't
of the
this John Quincy Adams?
I'm trying to read the line.
It's too long. It's all right. Supreme Court rules.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
Had been taken into slavery illegally.
Right. Watch the movie.
Yeah, it's a good Spielberg film.
Yeah.
All right, 1842, Giuseppe Verdi, his third opera. Help me here.
And Giuseppe Verdi, we all know, means Joe Green.
Joe Green.
Let's give him the anglicized version.
What a great name, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the
better.
Italians, they can sex anything up, can't they?
Yeah.
Because
what their word for fuck
I mean,
is.
I don't.
It's probably better than ours. Fuck is such an ugly word.
It's crude. It's crude.
Of course.
They have Italians have
gauche.
Like, don't. Yeah, it is gauche. Don't they have like 30 different words for love?
I don't
all
have
the different types
vocabulary.
Of amore they have.
Yeah, amore.
Amore.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Tony Hubert, it's a decent enough name, but it ain't great.
It should
but
be.
In,
isn't it Hubert?
Hubert. Right. In French, Anton Hubert, a little better. In Italian, Antonio Uberto.
Okay.
Very. Wow. See what I mean? All of a sudden, I have all my hair back. And I'm on a Vespa riding through Rome.
And you're svelte.
And I'm sexy, right? Just with, just that little change. Joe Green, Giuseppe Verdi.
Right.
Who do you want to date?
It's even a better.
Ladies, who do you want to date? Joe Green or Giuseppe Verdi?
I don't know. Put it on Plenty of Fish and see. But look at Nabucco.
Nabucco. What's Nabucco
see,
about?
Now I'm not sure that's a great, because that's on Nebuchadnezzar.
Got it. Okay.
So the Jews. Anyway, it was, and it's the big one is the Peasants' Chorus from Nabucco. It's a really good, great piece of music.
Okay.
Anyway, this made him. He has his third opera, and it was a roaring success.
And by the time, if your third one's a good one in opera, are you pretty established?
Yeah. Well, it made him.
Okay.
His better ones were coming up, but Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon. You know, comes from. Book of what were the books?
Well, you got
Daniel, I guess. Book of Daniel.
The history books of the Old Testament.
Well, if they're history books.
No. See, you don't know your Bible.
Jeremiah, Book of Jeremiah.
There's the books of prophets. There's the books of history. There's the books of wisdom.
Yeah, Proverbs and all that stuff.
You've never cracked it, have you?
Yes, of course I have.
Okay.
It comes up in trivia all the time.
Oh, that's
and there's
why.
Some good sex
trivia.
In there too.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
More
I
so
love
than.
It.
That Old Testament's filthy with it.
Well, that's what Alex said in Clockwork Orange. Too much preaching in the New Testament, but the Old Testament was great.
They had some drama.
Yeah,
they had some drama. 1842, the first documented discovery in California of AU.
Yeah, AU.
That would be gold for those of you scoring at home. And this occurs six full years before the California Gold Rush, and it occurs at Rancho San Francisco.
Okay, let's get out there.
Well, it took them six years to get there.
I watched Treasure of Sierra Madre the other night.
Oh, you can't go wrong, can you?
Yeah, it's pretty damn good.
That John Huston.
Fred C. Dobbs don't say nothing he don't mean. Remember?
Did they put anything in Bogart's mouth to make him, or did he just have to do that the whole time?
No, that's from a Navy injury. He had like a splinter or something. That's why he's got that scar. And that's why he talks that way. World War One.
So he has an unnatural lisp.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, I never knew that.
Right, that's from an old injury. Yeah. Yeah, if you can look, sometimes on a close-up, you can see the scar.
So it's not pathological. It's literally mechanical.
No, the man was hurt in the war.
Oh, damn.
That was a sailor. Badges? Right. We ain't got no badges. Badges.
You can't go wrong.
Yeah, that good stuff.
Please, no one remake that. Please.
Oh, it's coming.
I know, because they're out of ideas.
Yep.
Except for some of our ideas that come up with.
We got a horror movie. If any producers out there want to buy one.
We got plenty of ideas, including The Weekend at SCOTUS, which I think is going to be fabulous.
Yeah, somebody's going to steal it.
So in 1862, we've got the U.S. Monitor versus the, let me say this correctly, the USS Monitor versus the CSS.
Correct.
Virginia. They fight to a draw in the Battle of Hampton Roads. Now, what I want to know is what ship did they get to officiate?
Well, it was based on point. The 10-point muss.
Oh, it was a 10-point muss system with
three judges.
With a standing eight count.
It was 115 to 115. The problem was they had this armor and they had nothing that could penetrate it. Although they say if the
they bounced the monitor, a lot of iron off of each other.
If the monitor used heavier, apparently had used heavier ordnance, they probably could have penetrated it. Here's the other problem.
Okay, but could the monitor have even sailed? I say sailed. That's not even.
Oh yeah.
But could monitor even have functioned with heavier ordnance? Because heavier ordnance means heavier cannon, means bigger recoil, means more gunpowder.
I think it would have. But here's the interesting thing about the Virginia, which, aka the Merrimack. Its armor plate. See, it was they built the monitor from the hull up. Okay, it's all iron, right?
Yes.
The Merrimack, which is the Virginia,
isn't it?
Well, they used the hull of the Merrimack. Okay?
Yes.
So the iron is around the water over the water line is iron.
Yes. Okay? But under the water line,
right? It's just wood.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the thing: when it was laden, that means loaded with all its shells, it was heavy. And the iron went all the way down to the waterline.
Providing protection.
Yeah. Well, the more shells they fired.
The boat rises.
Yeah, it's rising, and it exposed some of the wood. So the more they fired, that's kind of why the captain stopped firing.
Well, even
exposing himself.
Even in ship of the line days, you know, at Trafalgar, Horatio Nelson.
Yeah.
Wasn't the real aim two things? Knock the mast down.
Right. For the main mast, yeah.
And then hit them at the waterline.
Yep. Yep.
You know, because when you think of cannon fire, you think these long arcing shots. Well, I mean, maybe true in some instances.
Underneath the water line,
you know, but sending balls through the top deck.
You hit their rigging, so you kind of
you immobilize them, and then you try to really pound them at the water line.
Yes, consult Captain Blood with Errol.
There you go. No. All right, that all happened 1862. 1908, Inter Milan, the football club Internazionale formed.
Haven't we had enough of this?
Well, it's just after a schism. Whenever there's a schism, you get a result here.
Yeah, this is the worst schism since the anti-popes.
Yeah, well, that's true. And it happened in Italy between the Milan Cricket and Football Club. Today, the two teams, Inter Milan and AC Milan, which is Atletico Calcione Milan, and again, it's not Milano, it's the English Milan. Still playing the same stadium, the San Siro.
This is a horrible schism, yeah.
Yeah.
Reminiscent of the Cardinals and the Browns.
Oh.
There were riots in the streets.
So, you know, those fighting words. 1916, speaking of this is a fighter. Pancho Villa, he leads 500 Mexican Raiders in an attack against the border town of Columbus, New Mexico.
Yeah, I don't know what this is all about, but
I just
Wilson
like saying,
sends Pershing after him.
Yeah.
Let's get in another war.
Well, it was a prelude. I think it was a trial run. Keep in mind the date, 1916.
Right. Yeah,
it's a trial run for the expeditionary force that eventually goes to Europe.
Right, and I think it kind of led to the Zimmerman note, which, I don't know, we all know is kind of suspect.
Kind of bogus.
Yep, I think so. But anyway, yeah, but Wilson's trying awful hard to get us into that war, the big one.
So, you know, leave the back door open for Pancho Villa to come running through?
Why not? Who cares?
Yeah. 1933, during the Great Depression.
Oh, boy.
Armand's favorite man, FDR, well, he goes and does a little thing here, and he submits a little act to Congress.
Yeah, it's one copy of the bill, they all read it real quick.
It's the first of his New Deal policies, the very first one.
Yeah.
So here comes the New Deal.
A little background on this.
Armand is ecstatic already,
yeah.
But this one is called the Emergency Banking Act. The Emergency Banking Act, the EBA, as the boys in the Senate like to call it back then.
Yeah, promulgated by the SOB, FDR. So anyway, a little background on this. It's February 1933, a couple weeks before Roosevelt takes over. Hoover says, hey, look, you know, we got a real banking crisis here. People are losing all their savings. People are getting wiped out.
Yeah.
The Europeans are taking gold out of our banks.
Yeah, no, it's a run on capital.
It's terrible. Okay, horrible.
Back when gold mattered, by the way.
Right. Well, yeah, that's part of this. Take us off the gold standard. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he writes a letter to Roosevelt. He says, listen, I can't do anything. You got a Democratic Congress. You're the new president going to be. Do something. Get on the radio. Say something about what you're going to do so we can stem this panic. Well, of course, Roosevelt did nothing. All kinds of people were wiped out. More banks closed. And the whole reason was, and he admitted it, I want it to be at its lowest ebb when I take over. So I can be the savior of the bank. That's the kind of son of a bitch
this
guy was.
Go ahead and completely break it.
Yeah. The worse it is when he takes over, the better it looks for him. And then, you know, when he talks about, he gives his first fireside chat, right, the night, I think the 12th.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to close the banks. Had no idea how he's going to open them, mind you.
Right.
I'm just going to close them.
Right.
Okay, we'll worry about that later.
And we'll cross that bridge.
And then he talks about balancing the budget and how profligate Hoover was, which he was. And how he was going to be, you know, add some semblance of sanity to Washington.
Yeah.
Well, we all know what happened there. So anyway, that's the kind of jerk this guy was. And by the way, he didn't write his first fireside chat.
That soapbox has been brought to you
by Arthur Ballantyne.
Kachigian.
Yep.
Again, of one.
Check it out. The facts are there.
Well, again,
guy's a prick.
I will tell you to check this out. You want a fairly unbiased view on FDR? Go to thisdayinhistorypodcast.com. Yeah, Traitor to His Class by H.W. Brands.
It's not that good. Get John T. Flynn, The Roosevelt Myth.
Okay.
Beautiful. John T. Flynn.
Either one. See if they're available as an audiobook, perhaps at audible.com.
I think they might be. I think Flynn's they might be.
And you can make a determination.
I already have.
I think the title itself, Traitor to His Class.
Yeah, but that implies that his class is that he's a man of the people and not a man of the aristocracy. That's his class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, he was just a jerk.
His name was Roosevelt. His aristocracy. Yeah. There's no way around it.
His name is Mud.
All right.
His name is Turd.
We're halfway through the big events, but who was born on this date, March the 9th?
Yeah, I got some good ones.
And I've got a couple to ask you about.
All right.
A couple I need your opinion on. I got two guys I would have loved to have met. I'm going to see if you can guess who they were.
I don't know.
But I'm going to start in 1454 with the birth of Amerigo Vespucci.
We talked about that. I don't know anything about this guy. I don't know what he discovered, what his, you know, name whether it's actually even named the continents after him.
What's undeniable is he is a cartographer of note. That's undeniable.
All right.
Explorer, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm right. There's got to be a book about this guy. Find it, read it. And let me know what he did, because I don't think he did anything significant.
Speaking of cartography, the next birthday, I'm going to ask you about this one, because I just put it down in case that something struck a chord with you. He's a cartographer, an astronomer, a German theologian, David Fabricius.
This guy, I know him. I didn't know about his cartography, but I did know him from studying astronomy, and I think he's the discoverer of sunspots. And also variable stars, which our sun is a variable star, which means its brightness, hence its output.
Wanes and ebbs.
Yeah, it flows.
Well, that's not true. Wanes and ebbs. It increases and decreases.
Right. And that's sunspots is what that is. The plasma, apparently. They're still figuring out what these are. Dark spots on the sun with elevated magnetic activity, apparently, and there's swirls, and I guess it's the plasma of the sun. Anyway, definitely, there's a definite link between sunspot activity and climate. We know that. Had nothing to do with carbon dioxide, by the way.
For being born in 1564
and
coming up during the 16th century, being a theologian and an astronomer was a dicey proposition if you were a citizen of the Holy Roman Empire.
He just found sunspots. He didn't say this, that we, you know, the Earth orbited the sun.
Yeah.
That would have been...
Still dicey.
That gets your toenails torn off.
Yeah. 1568, Aloysius Gonzaga, the Italian saint, is born.
Nice name.
And he would be proud to know today...
Walla Walla, Washington.
That Walla Walla, Washington, home to Gonzaga University, which bears his name... will have a number one seed in the NCAA tournament,
good,
most
huh?
likely. Yes, a sport that he probably could never even conceive of.
Hey, a guy with that name at Walla Walla, go. What's their team name?
I don't know.
Gonzaga Saints? I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay.
Look
that up.
Yeah. 1824, Amasa Leland Stanford, the businessman, politician, and the founder of Stanford University.
Who was the first female graduate geologist?
Oh, shoot. This is notable, too.
Yes, I wouldn't ask it if it wasn't from Stanford.
I don't know.
Lou Hoover. Yeah. Herbert Hoover, whom we hate, his wife.
Yeah.
Who wasn't a bad
chick.
Oh,
no kidding.
Yeah, Lou Hoover.
Lou Hoover, wow.
Yeah, that's how they met.
Have you ever been to Stanford?
Yeah, of course. Nice campus.
You
got to
say, the campus.
Screwballs, but nice campus.
Now, come on now. Well, what do you mean, screwballs?
Not quite as bad.
Can you talk
Berkeley,
into your microphone,
Berkeley.
Please?
Oh.
Got it all. You're all sideways. There you go, sir. Come on. That campus.
That's beautiful.
It is amazing.
Well, when you
absolutely
put a businessman
amazing.
In charge, that's what you get. Get a nice campus. When the state, i.e. the government,
it's
does
private
it,
institution.
You get
so
crap.
They, you know, they did what they wanted. I mean, look, no offense to Berkeley. Berkeley is a nice-looking campus, too. But the University of California's main campus does not hold a candle to Stanford University's campus.
When was that big? Remember the game?
I think 1981 when the band's on the field,
yeah,
or 82.
One of my favorites on YouTube.
The guy gets the trombonist gets hit.
That's great.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
The band is on the field. 1918, Mickey Spillane, the American crime novelist. Do you like his?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, good.
My Gun is Quick and
Guy
the Jury. I've read them. Yeah, good stuff. Get those on Amazon.
There you go.
For sure.
1926, Joe Franklin, the radio and television host, more famous in New York City. Billy Crystal really made him famous on Saturday Night Live back in the 80s. He did a parody of Joe Franklin that was pretty good.
Yeah. Okay.
If you had cable in the early days, you got this guy through WOR, I believe, because it was a super station.
Right, super station, yeah.
And so a lot of people around America suddenly had access to these.
I come from poverty.
Where do you come from?
We had no cable. We lived in a box.
1932, Keeley Smith, the singer and actress. Now, didn't she hang out with the Rat Pack a lot?
The name is familiar, but
doesn't she have the weird haircut? Sort of a good-looking dame, but
I'll look into it. Well, they didn't hang out with dogs, so.
No, they did not.
This is a big one.
Now, here's a big one.
Yeah.
This is a guy. This is one that I would have loved to have met.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
He's the first.
Well, so what? But I mean, that's a big deal, but I don't know if I'd want to have dinner with him or anything.
Yeah, I do.
He had a nice smile. Really, really lovely smile.
I don't care. I mean, great. But he's a colonel, he's a pilot, he's an astronaut, and he's the first.
He's a cosmonaut.
Yuri Gagarin.
That's right. First man in space.
I would love to have met him.
Anyway.
You know what he never got to do, though? He never got to do, like, the talk show circuit.
Well, he was pretty popular. No, he got – well, not the
well,
talk show.
Well, come on. In Russia, what's the talk show
tour,
circuit?
He went to
sure,
England.
Sure, sure, sure.
And here's the thing. This guy was really – you know, he was very abstemious.
What's that mean?
He didn't drink, didn't smoke.
Oh, he was an abstinence
Yes.
Okay.
Well, until he went on tour.
And then he cut loose?
Well, everywhere he went, they want a drink to him, so
sure.
He starts drinking. And
how can a Russian abstain from anything?
It's odd, but he was in really good shape. Guy, this is before, right.
You're telling me there's a Russian who doesn't drink?
Victor Vodka. No, this guy was good. He was good Gagarin. And but he starts learning how to drink, and then he starts banging some women. And, of course, his wife catches him, and he's got to jump out a bedroom window and cracks his skull open.
No.
Yeah, had a scar the
now,
rest of his
now
life.
We, and you say you don't want to have dinner with him.
Yeah.
These are great stories.
Yeah, he didn't cheat enough. I mean, I want to have dinner with Errol Flynn.
Imagine 10, you're the first man in space, and you kill yourself jumping out of a window.
Almost did, yeah. Well, and he died, unfortunately. MiG-15 accident.
Again, what is it with these other nations when a guy does something historic, why do you keep putting him in the line of fire?
Well, what about poor Francis Gary Powers, right? Dies, in the traffic helicopter crash.
That was his job, though.
Well, that was his job. He's a test pilot.
Yeah, but you can be a test pilot. You can be there's so many more things you can do.
What? Yuri Gagarin?
Yes.
What are you going
to
do?
They took all the good American pilots during the war, and they would always rotate them back to flight school to make more good pilots.
Yeah. Well, how about Bing Bong? Richard Bong?
Yes.
He died. He died now.
I know.
Same day as Hiroshima.
That actually got a thing on that coming up. Who else is born here?
Now, this guy I'd probably like to have dinner with.
But well, but tell me when.
When. I'd keep the sharps away from him.
1943, born March 9th.
Yep.
Bobby Fischer.
Very influential on me. That was my chess period.
Okay, so when would you have liked to have met Bobby? Do you want to know teenage Bobby?
17-year-old Bobby.
You want to know 17-year-old?
U.S. Open champion at 13.
When he wins the – when he how many times did he win the U.S. Open?
Six, maybe more.
Okay.
I don't know. As many times as he played it almost.
When did he
– He won like 1 year. There's like a prize now. He won like 9-0, which is absolutely – it's like pitching 5 perfect games. He won 9 games.
In a 21 match?
No, 9 out of 9. He was 9-0. I mean, if you win like 3 games and draw 6, you probably win. This guy wins 9.
Good grief.
In fact, there's a prize now, like a 60, the Bobby Fischer Memorial Prize or something. Nobody's ever going to win it. If you win 9 games at the U.S. Open, you get $64,000.
Would you have liked to have known him pre-Iceland and Spassky when he was still... Well, when he was still doing the workout regimen and keeping his body fit to keep his mind fit and
I don't know if I ever really want to know him, to tell you the truth. I'm changing my mind. I mean, I don't think he'd be a great – I mean, somebody you admire, but you probably wouldn't want to meet, like Joe Stalin.
Why? Because he's not a conversationalist or
– No.
Or is he going to ruin the legend for you?
Well, he's kind of a dick, he's not –
But that's the fascinating –
He wouldn't be a lot of fun to be around.
That's the fascinating thing.
I don't want to eat with a jerk.
No,
radio show with a jerk.
You say, "Hey, Bobby, what do you think about these? What do you think about these bankers?
What do you think about the Jews, Bobby?"
Well, yeah. And you just tee them up, and then you just let them go off, and you go.
Is that your idea of a good time?
Yes.
Oh, you're nuts. You're nuts too.
No, I want to know the insight because here's what the documentary on Fischer kind of got to. Because Fischer said this himself as a kid. He played.
Yeah, that's all he did.
Okay. Then one morning he woke up, and he was really good. That's what he said.
Well, I don't know how – yeah, but
– No, I mean
– I think it's more gradual.
No, there's a tipping point. And this has been written about. Fischer's been used in work like Malcolm Gladwell, tipping point. And, you get hit the 10,000-hour mark of practicing anything.
He
passes that up as a teenager. Okay.
Yeah, he's playing 12 hours a day at the Manhattan.
Exactly, and he's playing himself, and he's taking notes himself, and he's doing all this. Okay, and he really unlocks the game. Because again, keep in mind some of the.
Yeah, but that's not the question. The question is, do you want to have dinner with the guy?
I want to know. Yeah. Did chess drive him insane?
I think he's a little screwy. He's a little screwy before he's played chess.
No, I know he had an unusual upbringing with his mother and the
astronomical IQ and all this. And I don't know about that because they've done studies on whether a great chess player is actually a smart guy. So, and I don't think I wouldn't classify Fischer as a brilliant man. Great,
you know, outside of chess, you mean?
Yeah, great player and dedicated player.
See, my takeaway on Bobby,
and hard worker,
beyond all his crazy notions. And his lack of empathy for people.
Yeah.
Like what he did to Jeremy Schapp in Iceland.
Yeah.
By calling out his dad is just, it's reprehensible. It really is. I mean.
Yeah, he's not a nice guy.
He's a dick.
Well, he's a schizophrenic,
right?
I think.
Okay.
He had a lot of problems.
But at some point, did everything that your brain goes through to really unlock this game? Because other people have suffered from some type of mental ailment. Who made it pretty far up the chess ladder.
Well, I don't know what your point is. I just don't think he's a pleasant man to be around. But like, you can't deny.
I want to know. I want to know if chess drove him crazy. I also want to know.
I also want to know. This is what led to him being such. I think he's obsessive compulsive.
That's probably true. I also want to
play chess for 12 hours a day.
An obsessive compulsive kid.
Apparently, Smyslov said he put more time into chess than the whole Russian team.
Good God.
Yeah. I mean, that's how
that's almost unthinkable.
Yeah.
And I want to know, did he begin to see the world as a chessboard itself? Because when you look at the antics he pulled off in Iceland.
Yeah, he's out of his mind. Now, I don't know if those.
Yeah, but again, you're late. You're late for the first match.
Psychological.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know.
I'm saying, is he seeing that as his opening gambit in the whole thing?
I don't know. I don't know what he was thinking.
Or the fact that when...
And I read the book on it. I still don't
again,
know.
Again, the HBO documentary on... the normal opening, and he completely goes off script.
Yeah.
And basically almost kind of throws a game.
Yeah.
But by throwing a game, he's got Kasparov in a different state, and then he comes back at him. He said,
you're talking about Spassky.
Spassky, rather. And then he comes back at Spassky in the beautiful game,
forfeited the first game.
Which is 18 moves.
Yeah.
He beat him in 18 moves.
Yeah. Well, he's the best. I think he was 13 years old when he played the game of the century against Donald Byrne.
Uh huh.
The Queen sacrifice and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. But he would go to Central Park and play the guys.
Potsers.
The Potsers?
Yeah, he'd play anybody, but. He's just a goofball.
But that's when you're really playing
shame.
But that's when you're playing the savants, right?
I don't know. I don't know what he is. That's why I could see you fascinating. I wouldn't mind reading books about him. Read my 60 memorable games if you want to pick up you want to get better at chess. That's pretty good. But as far as meeting the guy and talking to him and breaking bread with him,
I'd do it.
I'd pass.
I'd do it.
Maybe the next guy,
Brian Bosworth, 1965. Happy birthday, Bos. The stories there would be great.
Two-time Butkus Award winner, the only man to do that.
Yeah, he was a fabulous player. I know.
An actor here too. Now that's
he was in movies.
Charitable.
Yeah,
I know. I've seen his movies. That's why I wouldn't call him an actor.
Not good. Now, would you have dinner with the next guy here? Nope, that's it for my birthdays. Who else do you have? Do you have any of your own birthdays today?
Oh, do you know who the only man with a winning record against Bobby Fischer is? The only master? Grandmaster.
The only grandmaster?
Yep.
Was it his
He's
teacher?
From Riga, Latvia.
I can see the guy.
Mikhail Tal.
Okay.
Yep. World champion.
That's his name, Mikhail Tal?
Tal, yep. 1661, Cardinal Jules Raymond Mazarin.
Mazarin.
We've all heard of Richelieu.
Yeah, Richelieu's your big French cardinal.
This guy got trained by him, and he took over. Yeah, so he was basically the leader of France when Louis XIV was still in his infancy and childhood.
Right.
So this guy and Louis's mother, Anne of Austria, ruled the country. Pretty good gambler, big-time gambler. And apparently the queen came to the casino once.
I like this.
He's winning big time, you know. So the queen comes. He's up like
50,000. Is this why the church has bingo?
Well, this is the same bingo.
I know.
He's paying for 50,000 EQ. So he says, hey, let it ride. The queen's here. So they do. And he wins. And he gives the queen 15 grand just for being good luck
for
charm.
Keeping the ice cold.
Yeah. And she refused it the first time.
The first time.
She deigned to take it.
Yeah, I think I'll
but
take it.
That's what made his reputation there. So this guy's up and coming. I like him.
Oh, man.
He wasn't real popular with the people, though. And Le Fronde got rid of him. Fronde being the little stone slings, like
David threw.
Yeah, David. They were throwing at him
mm-hmm.
and his windows and everybody that knew him. So, yeah, they didn't like him. But,
there you have it. Okay, who else you got, birthday?
I think that's about it.
All right, so back to the events. We've talked about this one before, but on this date, March 9th, this is definitely worth repeating. You can also hear about this in extensive recap in the Errol Morris film, The Fog of War, which is the interview of Robert McNamara. This is the first nocturnal incendiary attack performed by the United States Army Air Force over and on Tokyo, inflicting damage that is comparable. Thank you. Thank you. I bow.
Yes.
I got it. I got
right.
The word right.
Very good.
To that inflicted on both Hiroshima and Nagasaki 5 months later, I will go beyond and say it's not comparable. The damage and the loss of life in Tokyo is bigger. It's greater.
Well,
A wooden city burned.
We won't niggle over.
There's almost no way to calculate the loss of life.
So it's incalculable.
Yes.
Incalculable.
And, you know, for
it was no fun.
For everyone who goes, oh, my God, you know, how could you drop a nuclear bomb? Don't forget what else you did.
Conventional
okay?
is just, yeah.
Don't forget what else you did.
It's dropped on.
You're gonna cry about the nukes, then you better be crying about the incendiaries in Japan, the incendiaries in Germany, at Hamburg, at Dresden. You better be crying about it all.
Well, the question, of course, in retrospect is
necessity.
Yeah, was it worth it? That's one for great minds. Not Bobby Fischer.
No, because Bobby
was in Japan for a while too.
No, that's who would take him.
Yeah.
And then when Japan had to get rid of him, Iceland is like, okay, come on,
yeah.
come on
Giving
home.
Anti-Semitic screes.
Yeah. 1954, CBS television. They broadcast the episode of See It Now called "A Report on Senator Joseph McCarthy," produced by your man about town, Fred Friendly.
Who the hell is he?
Well, he's a producer. I've heard the name before.
Read Project Venona. He was right. State Department was full of commies.
Hmm?
You can hate the man, but he was telling you the truth. Now, he was self-aggrandizing and bigger than life and grandiose. No, yeah. Deluded, but
he liked
to tell the truth.
He liked the stage.
Hey, the guy's a tail gunner, man. He fought for you.
I get he
fought
it.
For your freedom.
I get it. He liked the stage, too.
Right. So do we.
Well, that's why we do the show. 1959, Armand. This one has a big effect on the world we live in,
yeah.
I think. The Barbie doll.
What's her? I told you this. What's her full name?
Joan.
Barbara Millicent Roberts.
Barbara. Why the Millicent again?
I don't know. That's her name.
Okay. The Barbie doll makes its debut at the.
And her parents are George and Margaret.
George and Margaret. That's boring. Matter of fact, that's about as vanilla white bread as you can get.
That's what she is.
Well, that's true.
Although, I didn't know that.
She is a child of the
50s. There was a brunette, too. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, they had brunettes and blondes.
When did they bring Ken into the scene?
Ken Carson.
Later. The American International Toy Fair in New York is where she debuted. This date, March 9th, 1959.
I venture to say Mattel would be bankrupt if it wasn't for Barbie.
Like
a billion of
them. No, there's two things that have kept Mattel rolling, because toys come and go.
And the M16?
Don't
they make the stock for the M16? Or they used to. Do you know that?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Do you know something? Like, if you get a gun case for, let's say a gun made in the 50s or 60s, and you get the toy equivalent will fit exactly into the perforated foam of the case.
It's just a toy for adults.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Don't
make it more. Don't overthink it.
Yeah, it's scary. No, two things kept Mattel rolling.
Kill commies with it. It's a
good
game.
One is in the 1960s, the baby boomers start to reach the age where they're really wanting a lot of toys.
Yeah. Who made G.I. Joe? Was it Hasbro?
I think so.
All right.
I think so. And then in the late 60s, Mattel hit the home run with Hot Wheels.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Because it's cheap to make, and you sell them by the buttload, but the margin on them was still good. And you hit kids, and you hit adults who started to collect them. You did.
All right.
Now, it wasn't big. Wow. Today, it's rather a big cottage thing, because kids got all sorts of options today. They don't necessarily need a Hot Wheel. But I had them. I mean, I had cases of them as a kid. And here's the thing. From my memory, Armand, in 1974, 75, as a 4-5-year-old, they cost a dollar. Today...
How much?
They cost a dollar.
Oh, do they? All right. I haven't priced them lately. All right.
Unless they were cheaper and I didn't know it, or my dad was lying to me.
Are you sure they cost a dollar?
No, I'm not. That's what I'm saying. So. I mean, maybe they cost 25 cents, and maybe I was allowed to get a dollar's worth.
Nixon took us off the gold standard. I mean, they had to go up.
1960, Dr. Belding Hibbard Scribner implants for the first time a shunt that he invents into a patient, which allows the patient to receive, help me here, hemodialysis on a regular basis. Is this blood dialysis of the kidney?
Yeah.
The standard dialysis we all know.
I thought it was older than that,
Because this is the standard dialysis we all know and hope to avoid today.
Yeah. Well, by a shunt, that means that, the blood's going through something else.
You're right, to be filtered.
Right, filtered out and back into your system. So I guess they bypass the...
I got to tell you. I remember my grandfather going through dialysis in the mid-80s.
Yeah, but people live. I mean,
they do. There's no, but it was rough.
Yeah.
Well, it was rough.
Three times a week, I think 4 hours a pop, whatever.
Yeah, he would go to the clinic.
Better than dying.
at some point, it was rough though. It was rough on a system. You know,
It's not rough on the guy that owns the clinic.
No. But really, can you imagine being the first round of dialysis patients back in the early 60s?
I think they got it down better now.
1961, Sputnik 9 successfully launches, carries a human dummy that they nickname Ivan Ivanovich. Those Russians, they have a sense of humor.
He had a nice smile, too, I'll bet. You want to have dinner with him, too?
No, he's not very much of a conversationalist.
Better than Bobby Fischer, man.
1982, Chrononauts.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell.
Okay,
this is.
I was going to ask you. I'm just going to read it. The Chrononauts host an event in Baltimore. Now, the premise of the event, to me, is genius, where they invite time travelers to meet and to demonstrate future science methods of time travel.
Hmm.
That's genius.
It'd be easier if you said you came from the past. You know,
either way.
You don't have to explain anything.
Either way. Just get a whole bunch of people to show up, charge them $100, let them make a fool of them yourself. You're at the bar. You ain't even watch.
I'd rather start a cult.
Well, that's successful too, especially
beautiful
if you get,
women.
Especially if you can get that tax exemption status.
I don't care about that. I just want some crazy.
Yeah,
women
but think of the
cult.
Think if you can pull a total L. Ron Hubbard there, and you could be tax free all the way. And finally, in 2011, Space Shuttle Discovery makes its final landing after 39 flights.
All right. Well, NASA's dead.
It's still impressive that that frame, because I know the tiles and
the
guts changed, but the frame for the. I'm gonna guess the majority of the frame never really changed. Because here's what I don't like when you hear, oh, we restored this World War II airplane. Oh, yeah, okay. How much of it is original? None. Well, then it's not a World War II airplane, is it?
No. It's not even a restoration.
You know, if you've taken everything off, what's left? If you're going to tell me the airframe is it,
you're being a little picayune today about some of these details.
I am.
What's the matter with you?
I am. I know. All right.
Days off.
Who died on this date? Now, speaking of dinners,
I've got one you missed. I don't
for
know
for what an event?
Yeah.
All right.
A death.
Okay, a death. I'm going to go to 1989 to start.
Yeah, you're too. No, you're too far.
Okay, I'm going to go to you
way
to start.
Back 15. Oh boy, we've talked about this guy. Where's his date? That doesn't matter. David Rizzio.
Doesn't matter.
We talked about him. 1566. All right. You know, he was Mary, Queen of Scots, quote, secretary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the Italian
I know this guy. And he
good musician, good singer, good secretary.
Well, good secretary.
She married
as secretary
Lord Darnley. He's a little bit jealous of this guy. So they're sitting there.
Let's say Darnley lacks a certain degree of confidence that is needed when dealing with a Mary, Queen of Scots.
Well, he wanted to be king anyway. So, you know, anyway, you're there with you're having dinner with your private secretary.
Private.
And in comes Lord Ruthven and his boys and stabs your dinner mate 56 times.
Was that necessary?
Hey, listen.
I mean, after 10, 11, 12, hasn't...
Nah, he was still moving and begging for his life. So, anyway, that was Lord Darnley. And the
56 seems a bit much.
The suspicion is that he actually was James the First father.
Yeah.
Probably was.
Probably.
Darnley couldn't.
Again, that's what I've told you about. Take all these royal family trees and throw them right out the window. They're meaningless.
Yeah.
They're absolutely meaningless.
David Rizzio.
The only thing you know is the mother. That's it.
That's true.
That's it.
How's it go? Mother's baby, father's maybe.
Yeah. Only one. Unless you ever heard the great Polish joke on this subject. Daughter comes home, tells her mom, "I'm pregnant." Mom replies,
"Who's the mother?
Are you sure it's yours?"
Oh, yeah.
1989. The American.
Wait a minute. I got another one.
Oh, you got another one. I'm trying to get to a big one.
Well, this one kind of goes with the one you're going to bring up.
Oh, very good. Okay, we have a segue.
1895,
yes.
Leopold Sacher-Masoch. Now.
Can you spell that?
Yeah. Sacher-Masoch. Now, where does that remind you of? Masoch.
Well, I'm thinking Dutch.
No.
What? Macho?
No. Masochism?
Yes.
That's where it comes from.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Kraft
okay.
Ebbing gave this guy a going over. And apparently this guy liked to, he made a little deal with his mistress. I'm going to be your slave for 6 months.
Oh, the original 50 Shades of Grey.
But you have to wear fur when you beat me.
18th century version.
Yeah.
Or 19th century version.
So, yeah, well, he liked to be smacked around, put on a leash and stuff like that. So there you go, masochism. That's where it's from. Now you may introduce your birthday, and this guy was big into this stuff.
He was big into
this. He's a BDSM LGBT.
And I can remember distinctly the uproar this guy caused in the second term of Ronald Reagan's presidency. Boy, did they hate this guy.
Well, a lot of people hated this guy.
But Robert Mapplethorpe is the name. He died on this date in 1989, March the 9th.
AIDS.
And I remember going to a bookstore, one a high-quality bookstore. I forget the name of it. It was like Library Limited or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Barbara's Books, yeah.
And I was always fascinated that in the magazine section, I couldn't flip through a Playboy. But I could walk over to the art section, pick up a big coffee table book, sit down, as a teenager, mind you, and page through a book where there's a picture of a guy with a bullwhip stuck up his ass.
That's Bobby. Yeah, that's what he liked to do. Well, apparently, they had a big retrospective of his works at the Corcoran Gallery. That didn't go over too well. Yeah. He liked to, had a little Europhasia.
Yes.
He was into that.
That was fine.
Sure.
But seeing Tiffany Lee from Chino Hills, California, age 23, and her three favorite things, standing there with an open shirt, that's no good. That's no good.
He took actual pictures of women?
No. I'm saying that's Hughes' publication.
Oh.
You go to the rack. That thing's bound up sealed wrap. You walk over to the art section, you can see anything you want.
Yeah, but that's art.
That makes no sense at all.
See, that's why you don't know obscenity when you see it. See, I know it when I see it. Me and what's his name? Was that Potter Stewart?
Yeah, I think Potter Stewart, yeah. Can you define
I know it when I see it. This ain't it, apparently. But
really, bullwhip up the ass isn't
black
it.
Guys with huge schlongs, that's
No, that's cool. That can be art. That's fine.
Art.
But again, what's the centerfold of the month? What's the Playmate of the Month doing that
you think I'm for censorship?
That is it's right. That's what I'm saying. This was one of the dumbest things ever. Who was this pacifying? Seriously.
Those crazy right wingers.
A bunch of crazy right wingers who didn't realize that kids like me were smart enough to walk over to the art section and see anything.
Yeah.
And stuff they would have absolutely deemed beyond deviant.
All right. Let's not linger.
And I'm not even saying I'm a fan of Mapplethorpe. I don't really get it.
Mapplethorpe.
Mapplethorpe?
Yeah.
I like Mapplethorpe.
No. See?
All right. Change gears. 1992.
No wonder the man's misunderstood.
Menachem Begin.
Menachem.
I can't do that thing. Menachem Begin, I didn't realize that he was Belarusian.
I didn't either. I don't know.
The Belarusian Israeli soldier, politician, and he would be, the sixth prime minister of Israel and a Nobel Prize laureate.
Yep. Sadat, Camp David Accords, Jimmy Carter.
I remember that well.
Yep.
Yeah. Then
Peanuts and Peace.
Yes, Peanuts and Peace.
Thank God.
1994, Charles Bukowski. Any thoughts?
Not a big fan of this guy. I don't get it.
He passed away on this date. 1994, Fernando Rey.
Tolerable.
1996, George Burns passes away.
Yeah. He was 100, right on the 100.
He was right at the 100 mark. I remember he used to celebrate his birthdays in advance. I always thought that was a clever deal.
Good idea.
Yeah. He'd be like having his 90th birthday party on TV, and he'd only be 86.
Won his Academy Award for Sunshine Boys.
Oh, yeah.
Best supporting actor.
Do you have a favorite Burns and Allen?
Any of them. The radio show. Listen to the radio show. It's on
YouTube. Did Gracie really make him? Speaking of love stories, not to compare Burns George to Napoleon, but he really did love his Gracie.
Yeah.
That really came off as
maybe. I don't
evident.
Think he was jumping out of any bedrooms, do you think?
Maybe.
Once in a while. What the hell? They're in vaudeville.
Well, not with that bad hip of his.
Like Chico Marx, you know.
Well, Chico. Well, I mean, come on.
The man's
there's
name
only
is
so,
proverbial.
There's only so many in the Hall of Fame, you know?
I wonder if he got to 10,000.
How many cigars? Do you think he actually smoked all those cigars, or was that just
Burns?
A prop?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah. Now, Dean Martin was drinking apple juice.
Yeah, he was a prop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, 1997, the Notorious B.I.G., that's Christopher Wallace.
All right, I know nothing about him.
American rapper,
I got one to add here, chronologically.
Chronologically,
now,
hit
we've
me.
Talked about this ad nauseum, but I think it should be brought up yet again. John Profumo, 2006, he dies.
Yep.
The Profumo Affair.
What a great name.
Christine Keeler brings down the Macmillan. prime minister,
yep.
the whole deal. It was a big bit. But my favorite is still, of that whole scandal, is Stephen Ward, everybody's favorite osteopath from Kirksville.
You know, he goes everybody's to Kirksville. Favorite osteopath.
Yeah, well, he goes over there, and he's the one that arranged all this. Apparently, they were banging at his place.
Oh, God.
Yeah. He liked to watch. You know, Stephen liked
well,
to watch.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. He couldn't get it up, but he loved to watch.
Oh, poor guy.
Stephen Ward.
And finally, my
killed
last death.
By the barbiturates.
Yeah. Is 2014 William Clay Ford Sr., the American businessman. Now, this is Edsel's father? Brother?
Know. I don't know which one he is.
I think it's brother.
Because Edsel is the Edsel's grandson.
Still, yeah, Edsel's Henry. Still kicking, man.
Henry Ford's the grandson, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yeah. So William Clay Ford, American businessman.
I'm glad you're throwing businessmen in here instead of soccer players and
well,
communists.
Man, the Fords, like any big family, certainly have their foibles, but damn if they
take their wealth, redistribute it. Come on. That's what you want.
No, damn Come if on. They haven't been, a huge American success story, not just in terms of making
yeah,
money.
But you hate that.
No, I love that. Again, the Fords.
What kind of liberal
give us
are
the
you?
Assembly line and the 8-hour workday.
Right.
And a basic wage. Now, granted, you maybe spend it at the company store, but still.
I don't think Ford was a big union guy, though.
No, of course. Who is that
you
owns
are.
A factory?
Oh.
That owns, if I owned a factory, you may see me take a different tact. Although I would want my workers to be happy, content, and not wanting to lynch me.
Not me. I want a bunch of mindless drudges.
No, good. Go hire some robots.
A week.
Go hire some
Five
robots.
Years old.
And when the robots have
that's
the.
That's what they're going to do.
When they have the, what's
hey,
it called?
You see Wendy's has those things now? The what do you call them? The kiosk? Apparently.
Okay.
I want to use one.
Last summer in London, next to Harrods, the McDonald's there. Had the kiosk.
Yeah.
And I thought,
Beautiful.
You know what? What a deal. We're going to do this. I made my mom come in and said, here you go. And I just wanted to see what my mom's in her early 70s. No problem.
Of course not.
No problem.
I never. Do you ever use a checker at Walmart? Do you go
not
to Walmart?
Anymore.
I use
not
the thing.
Anymore.
Hey,
I go to
always,
the, I go to the thing. Yeah. I go to the self thing.
Okay. That's, there you go. We'll end the.
And
show
she,
on that.
She nailed it. And I'm like, you know what? That's going to work. Say goodbye to those jobs.
Oh, you know who died, though? We gotta. I like Robert Osborne.
Yeah, yes, wonderful man.
The guy made that stage. I didn't know. You know, he's on the Beverly Hillbillies on the first episode.
What?
And he thought that, he's supposed to be a regular. He thought, this will never, it's never
oh,
amount to shit.
No.
And he turned it down.
So he missed out on all those royalties?
Yeah, he would have been a regular on the Beverly Hillbillies. But,
God,
yeah,
that
guy
sucks.
Knew his movies. I think I know my movie.
No, what a
like
studious
Robert
guy.
Osborne.
And beyond that, just a what a great
like
presentation.
It. He see now him I'd like to have dinner with.
Well look
anytime.
You can tell.
Yeah.
It's like Alex Trebek comes off as a jerk, sort of asshole. Bob Osborne did not. Here's another guy I'd like to think would be good at dinner is Bill Curtis, who does a lot of the voiceover work.
Is he alive?
Yeah, he's alive.
No, we're talking about people that are dead. Because you still got a chance maybe to have dinner with him. That's the whole point.
Well, maybe I could call him.
That's
we'll
why
see.
You say, Jesus, Muhammad,
yeah, no,
Bobby
yeah.
Fischer.
Yeah, yeah.
So
Osborne.
Bring up live guys. You call them up and
yeah,
invite
I could.
Them to dinner.
I could. They probably could use a meal.
I got to teach you everything.
Probably
pronunciation,
you do. Yeah.
Elocution.
Elocution.
Etiquette.
No, you don't have to teach me etiquette. I'm housebroken.
All right. Let's see what fork you use for the salad.
The cold one.
All right.
That's why.
Good idea.
Yeah, I use the cold one.
Don't use the shrimp fork.
Do you remember the scene in Catch Me If You Can when Christopher Walken? His fork is ice cold. That's because it's for your salad, Dad.
Correct. I remember my godfather asked a waiter one time for a chilled fork. He almost beat the hell out of all of us. Boy, what a look. I'll never get that look.
Here's something I will do, and it embarrasses the shit out of everybody I'm with. If I order a wheat beer and it comes in a pint glass, I send it back.
Oh, what's it supposed to come in?
Different beers have special glass. Nope. Oh. Different beers have special glasses for special reasons.
It comes in the flagon with the dragon.
Yeah, no.
No. Vessel with a pestle?
Yeah. For instance, if you have even an Amberbach, let's just take Budweiser.
How do you drink that crap?
Oh, it's
that
okay.
Dark stuff.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's good caramel. That comes in the
like
sort of barreled snifter.
Greek fire.
Even different whiskeys have slightly different glasses.
Yeah, I went to the Maker's Mark brewer.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah,
it's a distillery.
Thank you. Yeah. I was there and I still don't know what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was that's wonderful.
Did you dip a bottle into the?
No,
into
my buddy did. You had to buy
it's
one.
It's pretty cool.
You know me, I wouldn't buy one.
Well, you tried.
I don't drink. But he bought two and he dipped the. Yeah,
he dipped
the
it into the
on,
red
the apron on. Yeah. And,
it's fabulous, yeah. Man.
Oh, you've been there?
Yes, I've been to Maker's Mark, which okay. I thought. Here's why I love Maker's Mark. They take you into the room with the huge vat.
Yeah.
Okay. Where it's all bubbling, you know, because the yeast is going to work.
Right. You put your hand in there,
and they will let you stick your whole arm in there.
Yeah. Tastes like a cereal can.
Yeah. And I'll be like, isn't this? And they'll be like, no, dummy.
No.
There is no chance that you can infect this with anything.
Yeah. Your bacteria.
Your bacteria is already dead the moment that your skin touches it.
Right.
So and they're right.
Of course.
So you can do anything. Well, they stopped short of letting us try
bathing
one thing.
Bathing and nude.
Yeah, they weren't too. That but would, they did let fun. My guys. We there we
oh,
were.
Yeah, sure.
Almost to the elbow at one point.
That's fun.
They did not care.
No.
Beautiful. Loved it.
Everybody should take it.
Been to Jim Beam and Four Roses, too.
Yeah, my buddy went to.
It's a whole whiskey trail. Bourbon trail. Sorry.
Bourbon, yeah.
Bourbon trail.
He was comparing it to Jack Daniel, that tour.
No.
Better?
Better. Maker's Mark. They know what they're doing, brother. They know what they're doing. You can't even drink Jack Daniels. Right. And this is a good aside, though. And that'll do it for this edition of the program. March 9th in the books, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/thisdayinhistory. Podcast and like us on iTunes. Follow, don't like us, subscribe. iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or any major podcast outlet. When March 10th rolls around, we'll be here to tell you about it on lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.